Who remembers something from the pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dancing before the Rath Yatra cart that we heard yesterday? I'm going to wait a moment, so raise your hand just to see who is. Yes, Prabhu. Seven different kirtan groups. He divided all the devotees into them. Thank you. Adi, Prabhu, what do you remember?
Many different places.
Yes, in all the different groups. And what was the miraculous activities of Mahaprabhu that not everyone could see, but Maharaj Pratyaparudra could see? He could see, and also Kazi Misra and Savaboma Bhattacharya could see it, what Mahaprabhu was doing. And when they understood that the king, Pratyaparudra, who a king will tend to be materialistic, and how this superficially materialistic person, by the mercy of Mahaprabhu, was allowed to see his pastimes, the Savaboma Bhattacharya and Kazi Misra understood that he had indeed achieved the mercy of Mahaprabhu. Now, what were the aspects of the miraculous dancing? There was certainly that Mahaprabhu was manifesting sometimes in seven groups, each of the groups, and each of the persons, all the persons in each of the groups thought that Mahaprabhu is just with me, just like when Krishna was sitting with the cowherd boys and taking lunch. The cowherd boys were completely surrounding Krishna, and everyone, all the boys, had their eyes simply focused on Krishna, and Krishna was looking at each of the different boys. Now, that of course is miraculous, because the boys were surrounding Krishna, and each of the boys were thinking that Krishna is looking at me. And this was also something similar to this is the secret of how Prabhupada inspired the Krishna consciousness movement. Because there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of devotees, and Prabhupada didn't get to see them frequently. But Prabhupada's potency was so great, everyone perceived their individual relationship with Prabhupada. And indeed, sometimes in a lecture, Prabhupada would be giving a lecture, and there'd be hundreds of people there, and you'd be feeling, and this wasn't all the time, because all the time our attention wasn't great, but if one's attention was focused, one could feel that Prabhupada was speaking directly to him or her. It was very intimate, it was very personal. So similarly, this is how Krishna would be sitting surrounded by all the cowherd boys, and due to their affection for Krishna, they naturally wanted their own relationship with Krishna to manifest. And Krishna was manifesting his relationship with the boys individually, so that each one was satisfied. Everyone's focus was on Krishna. That's called ekanishta. Everyone was focused on Krishna, and Krishna was focused on everyone. That's not ekanishta, that's bahunishta. But yet, many, many, many focuses. But yet, everyone was fully satisfied. This is the nature of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this was the nature of Mahaprabhu's dealings as well. So what was the miraculous, some of the other miraculous elements?
Same person.
The same person. But they weren't relishing exactly the same.
No, not the same mood, but...
No, yes. Yes, but you're correct. Mahaprabhu, his dancing, because it was in the mood of the devotee of Srimati Radharani, and this is what's going to just begin, practically speaking, to deeply manifest now. But the beginning is a little it will move in its own way. But Lord Jagannath's car stopped because the dancing of Mahaprabhu stopped him. So let's hear something here. This is text... Oh, Adi, could you hand out the sheets? This is text 70. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, as translated by Srila Prabhupada, says, "Now please..." And Prabhupada, in his very gentlemanly way, says, "Please hear about Lord Jagannath's going to the Gundicha temple while Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced before the Rath cart." So the Gundicha temple is Vrindavan, and the cart is going to move towards Vrindavan. "The Lord performed kirtan for some time," this is text 71, "and through his own endeavor, he inspired all the devotees to dance. And when the Lord himself wanted to dance, all seven groups combined together. The Lord's devotees, including Shivas, Ramai, Raghu, Govinda, Mukunda, Haridas, Govindanandana, Madhava and Govinda, two Govindas, all combined together. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desired to jump high while dancing," this was his ecstatic mood inspired him to jump high while dancing, "he placed these nine people in the charge of Swarup Damodar." I noted when in the previous section where when Mahaprabhu, he organized all the devotees for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath, they did not resist being organized for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. This was their pleasure to be engaged by Mahaprabhu for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. So these devotees, Srup Damodar and the devotees in his charge, sang along with the Lord, and they also ran beside him. So Mahaprabhu was dancing and jumping high and running before the cart of Lord Jagannath. All the other groups of men also sing, offering obeisances to the Lord with folded hands. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu raised his face towards Lord Jagannath and prayed as follows. So the next four verses are very important verses, and these are the beginning of the expression of Mahaprabhu, of his mood as the cart is moving towards Gundicha. So the first verse is one that we're all quite familiar with. Does everyone have the place where the verse is? Yes. So he began to pray with his hands folded, facing Lord Jagannath, his face upward, fully sincerely. "Namo Brahmanya Devaya.
Namo Brahmanya Devaya.
Go Brahmanahitaya cha.
Go Brahmanahitaya.
Jagadhitaya Krishnaya.
Jagadhitaya Krishnaya.
Govindaya Namo Nama.
Govindaya Namo Nama."
Now these verses are in a very intriguing order. We'll pay attention to those, the way that Mahaprabhu is chanting them. But this verse describes Namo Brahmanya Devaya, that the Lord Jagannath, he is the worshipable deity of the Brahmanas, and Go Brahmanahitaya cha, he is the well-wisher of the cows and Brahmanas, and Jagadhitaya Krishnaya, Krishna, he benefits the whole world. In Prabhupada's, in the purports, in some of the purports, because Prabhupada speaks about this verse so many times in his books, in his lectures, in conversations. So I've just picked out just a few small, short quotations that describe why these elements are put together. The cow is the symbol of the most valuable food, and as Prabhupada would say, that that pure milk is so powerful. One can subsist only on milk. It contains all the nutrients. What we get in the stores nowadays, in the cartons, in the bottles, this is, you can't really say that it is milk in one sense. Even when I first went to Australia in the 1970s, there used to be early in the morning, you'd hear the clippity clop of horses. And the horse would stop in front of the door, and then when you'd wake up, when you'd open the door, there would be these milk bottles sitting there, and it was half full of cream, the milk. And now, to protect us and benefit us, it's all homogenized, and there's no cream that's separate. Of course, they take most of it out to sell separately, but it's, they homogenize it, and this process, someone once explained to me how they do it. They force the milk through these very small membranes, and they force it through that, and it destroys the different enzymes in doing it. And then they have this UHT milk that you can buy, ultra high temperature. It's so pure that you can put it on your shelf for 1 year, 2 years, and it won't go bad. Probably it's like paint put in some water, basically. the same benefits from drinking the milk out of a cow are just not there. And then what to speak of what they do to get the milk, how they always, we can't speak about it here in front of Giriraj. But Krishna is so fond of the cows because they're such innocent, pure animals that are so soothing to the consciousness. And indeed, they are in one sense, they're the foundation of culture. So the Brahmins are also so valuable for culture. They are the head of society. The head gives the direction so that the hands, belly, and legs will work in a coordinated way. It's one thing to have the head, the arms and legs and belly coordinated, but it should be guided by the head. In other words, if everything is coordinated to do something terrible, what is the benefit? There is only a terrible result. So the head has to be on society. The head on society means that the intelligence, that the Brahmins are supposed to study Shastra, and their mood is just giving, giving, giving. This must be the Brahminical mood. They give, they assimilate, they study Shastra and assimilate it. So therefore when someone comes to them and asks a question, they won't answer the question just based on what they just read the week before, but they've assimilated the totality of Shastra. So it's a lifetime's work, practically speaking. So that when a question is asked for them, they know what to do in every circumstance according to Shastra that will bring the true benefit, that will bring the person who is inquired towards the Supreme Absolute Truth, that the advice that he gives will bring them forward towards Krishna, towards their spiritual life. So between the Brahmins being the head of society, and people wouldn't be envious of the Brahmins because the Brahmins lived in a very simple and renounced way, and they just gave. And the Kshatriyas, on the other hand, they were the warriors. They also gave. They gave shelter and protection to such a degree that if someone took shelter of them, they would give up their life to protect that person. But, so they would give, but they required something in return. And the thing they required in return was surrender. You have to surrender to them. And on the other hand, the vaishyas, they would also give, but the nature, of course, of a vaishya, like a storekeeper, whatever you give, whatever he gives you, you know he's getting more than he's given. And in this way, society was organized in its way, but it was organized so that everyone could do what they were best of according to their nature and yet make progress. And the basis of this, the simple agrarian lifestyle based on the cow and the land and the Brahminical culture. So it's glorified here because Krishna is the worshipable deity of the Brahmins, he's the well-wisher of the cows and the Brahmins, and Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya. Krishna benefits the whole world, the Jagat, the universe. So this is Krishna, and therefore Govindaya Namo Namah. But this definition of Krishna, this glorification of Krishna that Mahaprabhu was giving to Lord Jagannath as he stands before him, is Krishna basically in relationship to this world. He's benefiting the world. The Brahmins within this world, the cows also within this world. But obeisance is to him. But the next verse, I'll read the Prabhupada's translation here, and then we'll go on to the second verse. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable deity for all Brahminical men, who is the well-wisher of cows and Brahmins, and who is always benefiting the whole world. I offer my repeated obeisances to the personality of Godhead, known as Krishna and Govinda. And the second verse that Mahaprabhu recited is from the Mukundamala Stotra, text 3 or text... It's text 3. Now, we'll just read this.
Jayati, jayati, devo devakki nandana so.
Everyone, please.
Jayati, jayati, devo devakki nandana so. Jayati, jayati, Krishna Vrishnivamsa Pradipa. Jayati, jayati, Krishna Vrishnivamsa Pradipa. Jayati, jayati, Megha Shamala Kamalango. Jayati, jayati, Prithvi Bharanasho Mukunda.
So each of these four lines from the Mukundamala Stotra has its own important meaning. And this, and Prabhupada has written a commentary on this, although there's no comment here, but he actually wrote a commentary on some of the verses. He never completed the entire commentary, but some of the verses of the Mukundamala Stotra, and this is one that he actually commented on. And he said the main purport of this verse, or the most important thing to understand, is that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, the Parabrahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is a person. So Jayati, Jayati, Devo, Devakinandana So. This glorifies Krishna as certainly, clearly, not impersonal, but personal. But all glories to the personality of Godhead. Deva also means effulgent and resplendent. Devaki Nandana, who is the son of Devaki. Also the son of Yasoda and Devaki. But here we'll keep it as just glorifying him as the son of Devaki. And there can be many sons of Devaki, and by saying that Krishna is the son of Devaki, it doesn't establish him, or Jagannath as the son of Devaki, it doesn't establish him as the supreme personality of Godhead, necessarily, because that sounds, on one level, ordinary. The next line continues in the same mood, but also shows that Krishna is definitely a person. Jayati, jayati, Krishna Vrishnivangsa Pradipa, Pradipa. So Pradip means the light, that Krishna is the light of the Vrishni family, and he is the glory of the Vrishni family. Another clear indication that the Absolute Truth is a person, not impersonal. And this, although it sounds very simple and obvious to us sitting here in the shelter of Giriraj Govardhan, but it is not obvious to most of the people in this world that actually the Supreme Absolute Truth, the all-pervading, all-powerful, unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is a person. And any doubt that he is a person and has personal characteristics, it has to be removed from the consciousness. Otherwise, we will have no understanding of what Mahaprabhu is going to be doing very soon. We will have no understanding of what bhakti actually means to establish a personal, to be reestablished in our personal loving relationship with Krishna. And if we don't have this primary understanding that he's actually a person, the most wonderful person, despite the fact that he is all powerful, if we don't have this understanding, there'll be no question of actually rendering bhakti. Because bhakti means love. And love means between myself and this other person. And if we're thinking that he's not actually, even though he seems like a person, but actually he's impersonal, we don't fully trust this. And I mentioned, and perhaps we'll hear this lecture, where Prabhupada says, this is one of the problems why we don't progress in our Krishna consciousness, because we have doubts that he's actually a person. Because the concept of person and the concept of unlimited don't fit easily together in the finite mind. It doesn't fit together, because someone who is unlimited, all our experiences of persons are limited. When they're sitting here, they're not everywhere. The very concept of form, it limits us to where we are. But Krishna's form is unlimited. Unlimitedly beautiful. Even that simple concept that just rolls out of the mouth so simply. He's unlimitedly beautiful. Just think for a moment what that means. Consider the beautiful people of this world. And they have clearly limited beauty. It's limited by time, if nothing else. Because in time it fades. But it's the actual beauty that it has. Because there's always someone more beautiful. But Krishna has unlimited beauty and unlimited strength. Consider that also. Strength without any limit. That means the universes, to create unlimited universes, doesn't take any of his, practically speaking, mama angso teza samava. It's just a small amount of his potency. You can't even say a small amount, because what's a small percentage of infinite? It doesn't work. The finite mind, our materialistic mind, it must stop trying to contain and measure the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because we will not be able to give ourselves to him unless we stop doing this. We will try to, we'll always be measuring, we'll always be doubting, and we'll never be able to give our hearts to him completely. And then, because we don't give our hearts to him completely, because we don't serve him with devotion and bhakti devotion, the result is that he doesn't reveal himself to us, because bhakti is a descending process. So Mahaprabhu, after speaking about Krishna in this world, in the first verse, in his first prayer, now Yaruvara Parish, excuse me, Krishna Vrishni Vangsi Pradip, that he is the light of the Vrishni Vangsi, the Vrishni family, and he actually took birth. The unborn, supreme, eternal Lord took birth. The two don't fit together. Kunti Devi was amazed by this. But yet, Krishna does this by his inconceivable potency, by his inconceivable power. He does this. Why does he do it? What forces Krishna to do what he does? He simply desires it, and that's why he does what he does. So he's a person, the supreme person, the supremely beautiful person, the supremely unlimited person, and the most kind person. And also, Jayati, Jayati, Megashamala Kamalango, Megasham. His complexion is darkish like a cloud. This is Krishna. And Komala Ango, his limbs are komal, very, very, very soft and tender. And yet, he's all powerful. And yet, he lifted Govardhan Hill. And Mother Yasoda, seeing Krishna with his tender child's body lifting big Giriraj, she's in complete anxiety because his limbs are so tender. And she cannot put the two things together. That there he is, the all-powerful Lord lifting the hill. And he's my son. The Aishwarya Gyan and the Madhurya, they don't fit together. And this is something that comes out that shows the nature, the supermost nature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, is that even when they see Krishna doing something that you can't even say is extraordinary, it's God's activities, they don't become covered by reverence. In other words, their love does not diminish the slightest bit. Well, on the other hand, Devaki, Mother Devaki and Vasudev, when they understand that their son has four arms that can no longer embrace him, what to speak of, chastise him or anything like that. So Uddhava, he observes the nature when he comes to Vrindavan, because Krishna sends him to Vrindavan. And Krishna willing, we'll hear of some of the activities when he enters Vrindavan. But he presents to Yasoda and Nanda, because he sees them just breaking apart and crying, thinking that they cannot exist one more day. This is the nature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. Krishna is in Mathura, and they cannot exist for one more day without Krishna. So Uddhava notices this, and Krishna has sent him to observe, because he's seen so much incredible love in Mathura, in Dwarka, of the Vishnivangs, Yaruvangs, for Krishna. But he has not yet seen the love of the Brajbasis for Krishna. And Krishna, practically speaking, has no one to talk to about this. And this is the nature of love. You need one person to talk to. It's not that you talk to everyone about it. It cheapens it if you talk to everyone about how much you love someone, but you need someone to reveal and disclose your heart to. So Uddhava came, and when he saw how deep, he saw something of the depth of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai's love for Krishna, and that they don't eat, Mother Yashoda hadn't cleaned the house in months and months and months, and in Gopal Champu, there's one pastime when Uddhava comes, Yashoda is so angry at Krishna, at Nanda Maharaj, for coming back from Mathura without Krishna, and she hasn't forgiven him for that. And Nanda Maharaj looks at her, she's criticizing him for coming back without Krishna, and he looks at her and says, "You foolish person, why are you saying that I came back without Krishna? He's right here, can't you see him?" So in his ecstasy of madness, he's seeing Krishna everywhere he looks. And there's that one verse from Padyavali saying that being separate from Krishna is better than being with Krishna, because when one is with Krishna, Krishna is just there. But when one is separate from Krishna, Krishna is there and there and there and there and there and everywhere one looks. This is Vrindavan. This is the nature of their love. So when Uddhava got a glimpse of the love, and this was before he even spoke to the gopis, he thought that if I don't lessen their prema, they're not going to survive more than one day or 2 days most. So I'm going to preach to them. So he began, he brought a message from Krishna. So he began to tell them very intelligently the message. And he said, "You don't understand this, but this person, this boy that you love so much, he is actually the all-pervading super soul. He is everywhere. There is no question of ever being separate from him." And then he explained so much philosophy. And actually, this boy of yours, he's in everyone's heart, the super soul, all powerful. And he's only captured by devotion. And everyone who has devotion for him, he'll be in their house. And no one is especially dear to him. Samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya. No one is dear to him. No one is inimical to him. Or he doesn't feel enmity towards anyone. He is equal to everyone. And no one is his mother and no one is his father. He was consciously trying to make their prema go down so that just to preserve their lives. But he was completely unsuccessful. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes how Nanda Maharaj replied, or really what he's thinking. First Uddhava said to him, "Don't worry, Krishna will be back. Don't worry, he will come back." And Nanda Maharaj is thinking, "He'll come back? And how long? 1 day? 2 days? 5 days? If he comes back in more than 5 days, we won't be here." And in fact, the residents of Vrindavan, they were simply maintaining their... This is what Vrindavan is. They were maintaining their lives. They didn't die just because they thought that that would cause Krishna pain if they left this world. This is Vrindavan. It's so complete. The love is on such a level that practically speaking, we can just barely get a glimpse of it. Just like someone saying, "You see that tree over there? If you look just above that tree, you'll see right? The cloud over there is just above the tree. This is cloud Shakanyaya. But actually, the cloud is so far away from the tree. But for us, this is the way which pointing to it, pointing to it, pointing to it. So all we can do in this consciousness that we have is point to what true love is, the true love of the residents of Vrindavan, and just understand this is the most wonderful thing. And understand also the type of reciprocation that Krishna gives to those who love him in this way. It is unparalleled. He gives himself, Atma Pajanta Vedanyata. He remains forever in the debt of his devotees. And Padam Ekam Nagachati. He cannot, in fact, take one step out of Vrindavan because his devotees have captured him so completely with the complete depth of their affection and the particular mood that they love him in. So when Uddhava spoke to Nanda Maharaj in this way and preached to him that your son is you don't know, he's all powerful, he's in everyone's heart, no one is his mother and no one is his father. So Nanda Maharaj started thinking. He didn't speak out loud, but he started thinking that since my son, my boy, has gone to Mathura, he's killed Kamsa. And everyone is telling him, oh, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the Lord. And Uddhava has heard this, and somehow he believes it. And people are saying that, oh, Krishna, they want to keep him there. So they're saying, oh, your mother is Devaki, and your father is Vasudev. And Uddhava has heard him, everyone saying this to Krishna. And Uddhava believes it. And he explains how he knows that Krishna is actually the mother of Yasoda and his own, the son of Yasoda and his own son. Because how would it be that when we chastise him in that way, in the way Mother Yasoda chastised him for eating dirt, and he accepts it. And if we don't give him the chewed betel nut from our own mouth, he becomes so sad. And he misses us so much. It's not only that we love him, he loves us so much. And this was the characteristic of the residents of Vrindavan. Not only did they love Krishna, but Krishna loved them so much. When Krishna was praised by Varuna, and Nanda Maharaj told the residents of Vrindavan about this, the cowherd men, because he witnessed it, they wanted to hear about their destination after death. They wanted to know if they were going to become liberated. There they were in Goloka Vrindavan, the topmost position. But the nature of the Naralila is they're not thinking it's the topmost position. They're just thinking Krishna, Krishna. So they wanted to know what would happen. So they asked Krishna, and Krishna first gave them the bliss of Brahman, and then pulled them out of that personally. And then he brought them to Goloka Vaikuntha, and they saw all the demigods and all great personalities offering prayers to Krishna, even though he was a cowherd boy in the form of a cowherd boy like Gop Kumar saw. But Krishna was not able, they were in the spiritual world, but Krishna was not able to pay them attention. The cowherd men were there and Krishna wasn't jumping onto their laps as he usually did. He wasn't running over to them and embracing them because he was in an official Lord of Vaikuntha mood. And they thought, this place, you know, it's beautiful, Krishna, but there's something just not right about it. Mother Yasoda wouldn't like this place. How? Because we've been listening to him telling all the demigods and all the great personages are reciting prayers to Krishna for hour after hour. How would Mother Yasoda tolerate this without walking over to him and Krishna and saying, please take something to eat. It's been an hour. You must be so hungry. This place is not so good either. And then when Krishna brought them back to Vrindavan, then everything was perfect. He brought them back to just where they were. And that was the supreme perfection. Because of the special way they love Krishna, Krishna reciprocates with them in that special way. So Nanda Maharaj, he thought that this Uddhava, he's very intelligent, but he's a little bit naive. He believes all the things that he's heard about Krishna, but we know, I've seen that Krishna, he is our son. So his prema didn't diminish at all. And then he had an idea. He said, when Uddhava goes back, I'm going to send a message with him. And this message will say, my dear Krishna, we have heard that you always stay with those who have the most love and dedication to you. There is no one who has more love and dedication to you than your mother and I. So please come home immediately. That was all that was on his mind. And he thought, I'll give this message to Uddhava. And Uddhava, when he goes back to Mathura, will give it to Krishna. And Krishna will read this message. And he will take it. This is what Nanda Maharaj was thinking, before the entire Yadu dynasty in Mathura. And he will say, no one loves me as much as Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda. I have not seen devotion like that here. I'm going back to Vrindavan. This is what Nanda Maharaj was thinking. But then he didn't give Uddhava the message and the pastime went on. But this is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. They may know that Krishna is God. They may see his power. But somehow their relationship with him is so sweet and overwhelming that knowledge doesn't diminish their love for him even the slightest bit. So, jayati jayati mega shamala kamalango, that Krishna's limbs are very soft and blackish like a monsoon cloud. And jayati jayati prithvi varanasho mukunda. So someone conceivably could have a soft, blackish complexion, and that doesn't necessarily mean that he's God. So these first three lines that Mahaprabhu was saying, in great loving devotion to the Lord, Lord Jagannath, these aren't exceptional in the sense that it doesn't definitely prove that he is the Supreme Lord. But the fourth line, jayati, jayati, prithvi varanasho mukunda, he removes the burden of the earth and he awards mukunda, he gives liberation. This is the quality of the Supreme Lord, but he's a person. He gives liberation. One may think that that's something that's an impersonal gift, a gift from the impersonal that you have to merge with the one. But no, those first three lines show the impersonal cannot have soft blackish skin. And he cannot be the light of the Vrishni dynasty. And the impersonal cannot be the son of Devaki. So he's a person. But in this verse, I'll read the translation, there are no direct pastimes mentioned. And there is no direct mention of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So here is the second verse that Mahaprabhu says. All glories unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as the Son of Devaki. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as the Light of the Dynasty of Vishnu. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose bodily luster is like that of a new cloud, and whose body is as soft as a lotus flower. All glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared on this planet to deliver the world from the burden of demons, and who can offer liberation to everyone. The fourth verse is on a different level. This verse, or the third verse rather, the second verse came from Mukunda Mala Stotra, and the third verse comes from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the 48th, the 90th chapter, the final chapter of the 10th canto, and the perhaps the next to last, I think there are 50 verses, very close to the end of the 10th canto. And Srila Sanatana Goswami explains how this verse sums up the entirety of the 10th canto. And he says that this, just as Agastya Muni drank from his palm the entire saltwater ocean, Sukadeva Goswami spoke this verse to drink from his palm the entire the ocean of Krishna's pastimes that he spoke in Canto 10. So it's moving closer, closer, closer to what Mahaprabhu is wishing to demonstrate and to experience before Lord Jagannath. And he will do it in such a way that he will capture the heart of Jagannath. And he's already stopped the cart from moving, but he will completely capture him and conquer him, practically speaking. And by the way, that the 78th verse, the one from Mukunda Mala Stotra, Prabhupada sang this at Rath Yatra also, and I think maybe in 1970. And one devotee, Upendra Prabhu, he put it in his, that's how I know about it, is that he put it in his Vyasa Puja offering in perhaps 1970 or 1971. And he said that when he heard Prabhupada sing this verse, Jayati, Jayati, Devo, Devakinandana So, Jayati, Jayati, Krishna Vishivamsa Pradipa, Jayati, Jayati, Megha Shamala Kamalango, Jayati, Jayati, Prithvi Varanasho Mukunda. He said all doubts were removed from his heart. So here's the third verse that Mahaprabhu said. And this moves into the pastimes of Krishna in Dwarka, in Mathura, and in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Jayati Jananivaso Divakki Janma Vado Yaruvara parishat swadavrasyanna dharmam stirachara vijilagna sumishta srimukena vajapura vanitam vadayan kamadevam. Lord Sri Krishna is he who is known as Jananivas, the ultimate resort of all living entities, and who is also known as Devaki Nandana or Yasoda Nandana, the son of Devaki and Yasoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms, he kills everything inauspicious, as well as every man who is impious. By his presence, he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. His blissful smiling face always increases the lusty desires of the gopis of Vrindavan. May he be all glorious and happy. So Sanatana Goswami, if you look at the verse itself, first of all he describes that the word Jayati is in the present tense. And that indicates that Krishna's position as the supreme, it has not ended. It continues. It is continuing up to the present, and the indication is that it will continue as well. So, Jayati Jananivas. So, Nivasa, this is the... And he describes that there are six super excellent aspects of Krishna's nature that this verse that Sukadeva Goswami composed describes. First, that he is the Nivas, the residence, the shelter, the foundation of all the jana, all the persons, and all the persons, the living entities, as well as his own jana, all the his favorite devotees. So he is their shelter. But he is the shelter of all living entities. And Devaki Janano Vado, he displays his opulences by inspiring Vasudev to carry him to Gokul. So soon as, so he is known as having taken birth from Devaki. He's known as being the son of Devaki, but actually, in fact, he's the son of Yasoda. This is Sanatana Goswami's comment. And this indicates that Krishna wanted to carry on his most intimate pastimes in Vrindavan, so therefore he instructed Vasudev, as soon as he took his birth, to carry him across the Yamuna to Gokul. And in that way, he would distribute, as Sanatana Goswami says, far and wide the most precious treasure. And that is prema. So that's Devaki Janma Vado. And then Yaruvara Parishat, he is the guide of the Yaru dynasty, who secures their happiness as he protects them. Thus he shows his care for his devotees. So as Mahaprabhu is saying these words, he's remembering Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan with the Yadu dynasty, and how Krishna is always protecting his devotees. And because his relationship with Krishna is unlimitedly deep, his heart is melting as he remembers Krishna in dealings with his devotees. He thus shows his care for his devotees, and there is, he also explains that how he brought down the assembly house and the Parijat of heaven and presented them to Ugrasena. And this way he guided and was the protector of the Yadu dynasty. And he showed unequal kindness to the Yadu dynasty. So this, Sanatana Goswami explains, there is an increase in the intimacy and the importance. And then the next section, the fourth one, is Svar Dobir Asyam Madamam. And this means that with his two arms, he did away with the Adamic, the irreligious. But Sanatana Goswami points out that he could have done this with his own will, by his own desire. After all, Krishna is all powerful. With one tsunami or one storm, thousands and millions, or a thunderbolt, so many people can just be killed like that. There is no need for Krishna personally to come. But Krishna used his own arms. Why did he do this? To remove the adamic, the irreligious elements of the world. Because he wanted to perform pastimes with his devotees. And this is why he used his own arms to destroy the demoniac forces in the world. He wants to engage in pastimes with his devotees. Why? It is his desire. It is his nature. He's controlled by his devotees. He loves his devotees. And then, Stira Chara Vijinigna. He destroys the misfortune of all. Stira chara means the stira, the non-moving and the moving living entities, Vrijinigna. He destroys their misfortune. So Sanatana Goswami describes, he bestowed his prema bhakti on all the residents of Gokul and Braja, including the creepers, the bushes, the trees, what to speak of the moving living entities. And he disregarded any lack of qualification, and he gave them all the gift of loving devotion. And if one has devotion to Krishna, Sanatana Goswami continues, automatically one's miserable material situation is destroyed. So within this simple glorification of Krishna, there is an important hint for us as well, because to be in the material world, to be under the control of the material energy, means to suffer. There is no avoiding this. But when we learn the art of suffering, so to speak, then the suffering disappears. And what is the art of suffering? The art of suffering is described by Lord Brahma. Tateyanu kampam susamikshamano bhunjane vapma kripava bhakam ridvagva vapulam vedana namaste jivateyo muktipade sadaya bhak. That we should see our suffering. We should see our suffering in relationship with our misdeeds, and we should see our suffering in relationship with Krishna. We should see that the difficulties I experience, they're because of my previous activities in this life or in previous lives, and I'm getting what I duly deserve. But Krishna has so kindly minimized them. If we see Krishna's hand in it, that Krishna's kindness is there, and I'm getting something, a token punishment. But Krishna is there, and it's not anyone else's fault but my own. And this is so difficult to do. Why? Because the materialistic mind does not like to hear this. It always points the problem being outward. So therefore, in the current New Agey type of philosophy, they say something that's very intelligent. They say you should take responsibility for yourself. They don't take it far enough, but we should accept that my position, whether it be good or bad or mixed, and everyone's position is mixed, is a product of my karma. And whatever suffering, if when suffering comes, if we just do this one thing, accept it, and don't think that it's exactly because of the external event. Because there's a saying that Prabhupada would quote, that when you go to Bengal, you take your forehead with you. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was expert at reading foreheads, not palms. He didn't do this after, because it's much better, because if you can read people's fate in their foreheads, then if they have their gloves on or something like that, unless they had their hats pulled over their heads or something like that, you could still know exactly who you're talking to and what the future is, etc. So even if we try to remove ourselves from this current difficulty, and I've seen this so many times in my life, that the difficulties, they follow me. The exact circumstances will change perhaps, but the circumstances in a general way, if I'm due to have a branch of a tree fall on my head so I don't walk in any forest, so something else when I'm walk a piano will fall on my head somewhere else if I'm trying to avoid it like this. One can't avoid one's fate, because because we've acted, we've caused trouble to others in this world. We've broken principles. We've acted against our own welfare. We've hurt others. We've acted sinfully. Sinfully means not following Shastra properly. The laws, the documentation of the material world. So therefore, we get reactions for all those things, and that is the cause of my suffering. And if I change my circumstances, then that suffering will follow me. So the suffering is not within the circumstances exactly, but the suffering is my fate. So if we just separate the internal suffering that I have from the external events, and just accept it. I'm do this. It's not anyone's fault. There may be faults in the external circumstances from others. Or say if I have a stick and the stick hits me. But we should see that yes, the stick has hit me, but the stick is in Krishna's hands. And the person who has chastised me when I didn't think I deserved it or did this or that is just like the stick. Why blame the stick? You blame the person who's holding the stick. So blame Krishna. But we shouldn't blame Krishna, because we should really ultimately blame ourselves, and Krishna is just the one who is permitting it to happen. The upadrashtanumanta cha bharta bhaktam. He's the anumanta. He's the permitter. He permits it to happen because it is our fate. So if we can just isolate because of things we've done. So if we can just take the suffering, and with our intelligence, remembering this verse, tateyanu kampam susamikshamano, we should separate the suffering from the stick, the events that appeared to be the cause of our suffering, and then we should accept, okay, I deserve it. This is because of something I've done. And we hold on tightly, ritvag vivapodam vidadhanam namaste, we hold on tightly to the lotus feet of Krishna. We hold on tightly to taking Krishna's shelter. And when we, if we attain the amount of devotion, and it takes a lot to be able to do this, to regardless of what happens to us, the good and the bad, the same mood is there. The happiness that we feel when something good happens, we take the same way. This isn't mine, I'm not causing it. It has to do with Krishna and my karma. And we just accept it, the misery, and we just hold tightly to Krishna's lotus feet. And the suffering, because we're specifically talking about suffering at this point, it actually vanishes. Or it doesn't vanish, if Krishna doesn't want it to vanish. But the suffering of trying to avoid suffering, which is most of the suffering, that is what vanishes. So if one becomes a devotee, and I don't mean the word devotee in the sense of what year did you join Prabhu, I mean holding on relentlessly, regardless of what's happening to us externally, holding on whether in happiness and distress, and all the different mixtures. If we can just be an actual devotee, hold on to Krishna's lotus feet in all circumstances, thinking ourselves on all levels, with the body, with the mind, with the intelligence, with our words, ridvag, vipodam, offering obeisances to Krishna, then one is liberated. Mukti pade sadayabak. It just automatically happens. Impersonalists, jnanis, etc., they are working very hard for liberation. But if one could just do this one thing, jivati om mukti pade sadayabak, one will be liberated like that. This is the promise. So therefore, sthirachara vrijanigna, that automatically, Krishna, when Krishna gave the living entities devotional service, automatically the sufferings of material existence are removed. And he gave that to all the living entities of Vrindavan, so sthirachara. And then finally, so how Sanatana Goswami has connected this wonderful verse with the wonderful pastimes of Krishna throughout the 10th canto is truly is very, very sweet. And then finally, the last line of it is that Sumita Sri Mukena Vrajapula Vanitam Vradayan Kamadevam, that he brings it, and this is Mahaprabhu's entrance point, practically speaking. As the chariot has been taken to Gundicha, this is his entrance point into the mood of Srimati Radharani. That Krishna, Susmita Sri Mukena, with his smiling, with his sweet smile, enchanting smile, we can see it over there. Very enchanting. Maduram, maduram, vapavasya vibho, maduram, maduram, vadanam, maduram. The Krishna's smile and his face is so enchanting. Mridu smittam madhu gandhi etaroho maduram 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 maduram, that it is like the sweetest of honey, his gentle smile, and his smile which is compared to the fragrance of honey itself. It is so captivating, it is so enchanting. And the 10th canto indeed is compared to the smiling face of Krishna. It is enchanting. So by that enchanting smile and his wonderfully beautiful face, which is encircled by locks of curling blackish hair, and his dancing eyebrows, and his with his dancing eyebrows that are compared to bows, shooting the arrows of his sidelong glance, he's captivating the hearts of the Vrajapura Vanitam, the young ladies of Vraja. He's completely captivating their minds so that they are mad thinking about him. And in this way, Vardayan Kamadevam, he's increasing their so-called lusty desires. Their desires in Madhurya Ras to be with Krishna. Very, very intimate. The mood that Mahaprabhu here is expressing here is so intimate because he's talking about Madhurya Ras, which is the most difficult thing. The Madhurya Ras in Vrindavan is the most difficult thing for a conditioned soul to understand. Because immediately, soon as a conditioned soul thinks of the intimate dealings between men and women, boys and girls, his mind becomes agitated, thinking himself a part of it and trying to enjoy in some way or another. But yet, despite this fact that this is not the realm for conditioned souls to meditate on, despite that fact, it is the highest of highest experiences available in existence. It is the most intimate relationship with Krishna, despite the fact that a conditioned soul cannot enter into a deep meditation upon it. It's the highest, most pure thing. And therefore, when we read about what is going on in Vrindavan from Chaitanya Charitamrita, from Adi Lila 4, we heard very carefully Krishnadas Kaviraj's words that there is not the slightest trace of Atma Indriya Priti, the desire to satisfy one's own senses, that Tare Bali Kam, that is called lust. And lust is like iron. And love, Krishnendriya Priti, Prema, that is like gold. We can say that they are both metal, and it is true. But one is the most valuable metal, and the other is common that everyone can possess. The most unexceptional thing is lust. It is common to the most base animals. But the most exceptional thing is love. And Narottama Das Thakur, he compares it to gold purified in 100 flames. And what he means by that is that if you take gold and melt it and let the impurities rise to the top and take off the impurities and then melt it again and let the remaining impurities rise to the top and then you take off those remaining impurities and then you melt it again and less and less and less and less impurities are there and less impurities rise to the surface until, practically speaking or actually speaking, that gold is not 99.9% pure. It is 100% pure. When there is not the slightest trace of selfish lust, Atma Indriya Priti, in the consciousness, and one wishes to please and love Krishna in the special way that the Braja Gopis please and love Krishna, then one can enter. But there can't be the mixture of impurities. It disallows our entry. So therefore, the process of sadhana bhakti, and we'll hear soon a lecture of Prabhupada where it's on that paper that last one I gave you to print, that we'll hear later. Maybe in the break you can get that print. Oh, you already did it? Okay. The Prabhupada says, to get free from that level of impurity, that depth of impurity, to be that unselfish, you have to love. It has to be based on love. You cannot do it otherwise. And therefore the impersonalists who through their own power wish to become aloof from the material world, they can never become aloof from the material world because they have no love for Krishna. They cannot purify the last elements of false ego from the consciousness. And it is developed to such a degree and in such a subtle way for an impersonalist that in the guise of spiritual life, it's I am the Supreme. The false ego has become, it has taken over completely. A full identification with the Supreme. Anything but become a servant of Krishna. Anything but become a servant of God. That's false ego. So after describing, Sanatana Goswami's comment is, this how he increases the lusty desires of the gopis, Kamadevan, Vardayan means increases, by his sweet, enchanting smile. He increases the desires of the gopis. Completely on the spiritual level, Sanatana Goswami says this is his greatest glory. His fascinating beauty, his charm, he's so charming, he's so clever. And these he exhibits to the fullest degree in his dealings with the gopis of Vrindavan. Krishna's face, his mukha, expands the play of Cupid amongst the gopis. And by expanding their desire to love him and playing rasa with that, by mixing in his pastimes, by having the variegatedness of his pastimes, by his charming leelas, by his clever dealings, by his stealing the gopis' clothes, by his playing his flute as he stands upon Govardhan Hill, as he embraces a cow or his coward boyfriends in the presence of the gopis, as he twirls a lotus flower and in that way twirls their hearts. By these charming and clever activities, he increases Vardhana, their desire to be with him and enjoy with him, and brings them to the highest level of prema. So much so that when they blink their eyes, they criticize Brahma, because that momentary nimesena, blinking of the eye, is intolerable for them. It's intolerable. This is love. This is what Krishna has done. And how Krishna's Leela Shakti has orchestrated these pastimes just to do this, to bring the residents of Vrindavan to the highest, intimate relationship with Krishna. This is most wonderful. So after these first three verses, the first one, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, describing how Krishna is the true benefactor of this world. And then the second verse, describing how Krishna, even though he's that, and removes the burden of the earth, etc., he's a person with the softest skin. So much so, I remember how one time Satchinandana Maharaj described how when a leaf falls from a tree on Krishna's skin, that it turns bluish because it's so delicate and so soft. There is an impression made on Krishna's skin just from the touch of a leaf. And the gopis are so absorbed in that aspect of Krishna, but not, oh, how wonderful it is and how soft Krishna's skin is, how wonderful. But they're in complete anxiety as Krishna moves on the forest paths, because there may be a thorn or there may be a pebble. And Krishna's soft lotus feet, which are that tender, they may become pained in the slightest way. This is the anxiety of the gopis. Compare that to the anxiety that we feel every day, and we'll know why we are not in Vrindavan. Because my anxiety is all about what happens if a leaf falls on my skin? Or what happens if this happens to me? And what happens if that happens to me? Me, 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 me. All false ego. And therefore, until we work out this little problem, this little false ego issue that we have, about just having to work out who's actually in the center of the universe, we have to stay here in the material world. So why don't we take a short break?